God
God.
grant
Give me
the
the serenity
serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the
to
things
things that
I
I
can,
can,
and the wisdom
wisdom
to
to
know
know
the
the
limits.
difference. Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone in their first 30 days? We would like to welcome you.
I'm James.
James,
Greetings. Welcome, buddy.
welcome. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or new to the meeting? All right. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Board to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend the alcoholic as a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking A simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing step four, part one. Please welcome our panel this evening, Paul and Matt.
All right.
I will read the first paragraph on page 63, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each on the reading. Step four, create a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 63. Next, we launched out on a vigorous course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have had little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to the causes and conditions. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? Paul?
Yes. Hey, everybody. My name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic.
Paul.
Man, what a like! I'm just pumped to be here in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with people I love, man. I really truly believe in AA, and the power that these steps have in bringing us back from just like certain death and sadness. I mean, that's all that has that life has to offer me when I'm out there drinking. And it took me quite a while to be convinced of step one. That I'm screwed when it comes to alcohol, and that when I run my life, I'm also screwed. And to just admit that AA could help me, and I just kind of got on with the business of doing AA. That's the first three steps, really. And it's when we are doing the readings, my book is completely broken. The binding broke right at this step because I take so many people through the steps, we get here, and then they kind of drift. And I did the same thing, dude. I got to step four, and I was all on board with this before work was involved. Before I had to start getting stuff down on paper. And I just I fully like just took on board the fact that I was screwed when it comes to alcohol and that my life when I'm managing it is screwed. But I still wanted to manage the steps for some reason. Right? Like I admitted my life was screwed, but I couldn't admit that I was powerless and that AA should help me. I knew that I needed help, but I was just I figured I could figure it out better. And my sponsor was like, "Hey man, we're gonna launch in a rigorous action." And in my mouth, out of my mouth, I said, "Yeah." And in my head, I was like, "Nah." And I sat on this step for, gosh, 6 months. Dude, I just sat on it for 6 months. I'm just the kind of guy that gets, I feel good enough, and that's enough. And then I just stop. You know what I mean? Like I'll get some results, and I'm like, nah, that's good for now. And then I'll come back real hard. Like I'll just like really work for a day on the first column, which is just naming people. And I'm like, oh man, that was pretty good. I feel good about that. And it took me so long to finish this step. And I think part of it was because I didn't really realize what we were doing here. I didn't realize what we were getting at, where it's like, hey, if selfishness and self-centeredness and self-seeking and the 100 forms of self are the root cause of the issue, then I need to look at that. And I need to get that down on paper, and I need to be honest with myself so that I can see what's going on behind the scenes. Because the weirdest part about my alcoholic brain is that I'm so what's the word? Where you're lying and you believe it. Thanks, guys. We all come from the same place. I'm so delusional that like I'm lying. I know that I'm lying, but I believe it. That's real weird, man. And so when I'm coming to the steps with that mindset, I just was unable to be honest with myself. I really was just incapable of it. And I ended up getting to enough pain with more untreated alcoholism, sober, in AA, not doing the steps I was supposed to be working on, just getting so tight and upset and frustrated. And I brought that to my sponsor and he's like, "Did you do the step?" And I was like, "What step?" He's like, "Dude, the step you've been on for like half a year. Did you do the step?" And I was like, "No, I didn't." And he kind of just chuckled like that. And he was like, "Well, then you're getting the exact result of your actions." And that really upset me. I was like, "I'll show you." And so I was like, "How do we do this again?" And so he showed me the four columns. And he did an interesting thing with me. He suggested that I go vertically. And I'm not going to get into the parameters of doing the four step and stuff. You guys got sponsors, go talk to them. But when I'm working these steps vertically, just listing all the people, all the things they did, all the things that it how it affected me, I start seeing patterns. And that's for me, I'm a pattern guy. That really helped me to start recognizing what was really going on inside of me. What did I find from that? I found out that I have a lot of fear tied up in money, a lot of fear tied up in money. I realized that my ego is very, very easily hurt, and those people just get all of my anger. When I got into that fourth column, and we're going to talk more about that, but when I got in there, I started seeing, oh my gosh, dude, I talk shit on everybody. I'm an ugly person on the inside, and I want people to like me better, so I tear other people down. Oh no, I thought I was just a nice guy that drank too much. So, I just didn't understand that this is like going to the dentist if you haven't been in a decade, and they're like, oh man, we got to get under this gum line. We got to get all of this out. Right? Like that's what the fourth step was for me, was just this deep cleaning of all the kind of crud that I had swept under the rug for years. And it was just getting it all out that allowed me to actually be honest and see myself for who I really was for the first time. And after you see that, really no going back to the guy that you were before or the lady that you were before. Because once you see those things, it's kind of ugly and you don't want to do that anymore. So that's what I got for that first reading.
Hey, Matt, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Paul and I share a lot of the same things when it comes to the step. In fact, we actually shared the same sponsor when we did this first time. For me, it was, when I got here, I was so delusional, as Paul alluded to, that I truly thought that I was a good person, that I just drank too much. Like, if I could just stop the drinking, like maybe, well, maybe not stop. Maybe if I could just kind of curb it a little bit, figure out how to do it responsibly. You know what I mean? Like, stop going to jail. Just weird things like that were happening to me. Stop getting locked out of the house at 2 o'clock in the morning, or show up like 3 days later, or whatever the case might be. Everybody's looking for me for 3 days. Like, I thought if I could just stop those things, maybe I'd be all right. And luckily for me, I got to a place where I was just completely broken. I was like, I can't live like this anymore, and I don't know how to live without alcohol. Like, I am so screwed right now. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I'm driving down the road and I'm having thoughts of driving into trees and stuff like that. Like, what's the easiest way that I can just end this? Luckily I didn't do that. I did drive into an undercover FBI agent, which is another story all in itself, but not on purpose. Not on purpose. That's key. Not on purpose. But yeah. So I when I did the first three steps, it seemed like that was okay. Like, I kind of had figured at this point, it took me like, I don't know, 20 some years to figure out that my life was unmanageable, because I really didn't know what that was. Because I still had money, I still had a car, still had the house, kind of had a wife and family, sort of, when I allowed them to be there. So I didn't have any like major repercussions other than, like I said, going to jail a couple times, which some people would be mortified by that, but it didn't scare me when I was drinking, and then I got a DUI and that didn't scare me, and all of those things. It took something a little bit deeper for me to get to a place where I was ready to make a change. But it dawned on me and scared me to death when I started looking at this four step, because, like Paul talked about, it was time to go into action and start doing things. Man, I love to procrastinate. I love to sit there and tell you that I'm not, it's, I'm not that, I'm not selfish. I'm not self-centered. Look, look at all these good things that I do, right? And it's funny, because for every one good thing I was doing probably 100 bad things, but that one thing is what I would focus on. I'd really told myself that I was a good person. And this was the first time, and I'm just going to be completely honest on this. It was the first time I was ever honest with anyone about who I was as a person and as a human being and as an alcoholic. And that was scary to me. So it took me, I think I took an even longer route than 6 months. I think it was a little bit longer than that, which I don't suggest. It took me getting to a spot where I would write down names. I would start writing down what they had done, how it affected me, and then I would get to the fourth column and I'd throw it away and I'd just be done. I would do the first three columns a couple times with some people, the people that are really pissing me off that day. And then I get to that fourth column and I'm like, I didn't deserve any of this, and crumble it up and throw it away. And that's just the way I lived for a while, and like Paul alluded to, I was comfortable enough. I'd learned to not pick up a drink just for today. I'd learned that I needed to be in a meeting every day, sometimes two or three if need be. But I knew I was becoming okay with not drinking. Like, it was still thoughts in my head. I still thought about drinking. But I didn't realize how, I love the one part of the reading where it says we were spiritually sick, because I really did not, it didn't even come to me that that's exactly what I was. I had no idea that I was spiritually sick. None. And what the fourth step made me do was start writing down, and get back to that. It made me write down exactly who I am as a person and my behaviors, who, what I do, how I behave, the things that I do to people, the way I manipulate, the way I'm narcissistic, the way I'm, you can name it. I've got all of it, when I'm not doing Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I, like a good alcoholic, I said, no, I'm not going to do it until my sponsor absolutely makes me. And I'm a deadline guy, so you got to give me deadlines. That's just the way my mind thinks. I'm like, I'm going to procrastinate. He keeps asking me, hey, when are you going to do this? And I'm like, I'll get to it. And finally he says, all right, Saturday morning we're meeting at the Hague and you're doing your fifth step. And first of all, that's weird as could be, to meet a guy on the side of the road near a pond or whatever the Hague is, water, you know what I mean? Water.
The inlet.
And we're just going to sit there and we're going to talk about all this stuff. And the way that I grew up was, as a guy, you deal with your own problems. Those are internal. You don't talk about stuff. You're big and strong and tough. Suck it up, get through it, you'll be fine. And yeah, little did I know, he told me that Saturday morning we're gonna meet. And so Friday night at 2 o'clock in the morning, like a good alcoholic, I'm writing down my stuff on my four step, you know what I mean? Like 28 pages of just blah, just come out, you know? And so I'm exhausted. I'm, you know, it, but I had no clue that I was spiritually sick like I was. It took a lot for me to get there. And it like Paul said, I maybe part of it was I didn't want to admit who I was as a human being because then I'd know the truth about me. And it would make it so much harder to do the things that I enjoyed so much, you know? Because that's how I lived my whole life, living that way, you know, manipulating, lying. I had never told a soul of truth in my life. If it benefited me, I'd lie right to your face. I'm the guy who helped, I'll steal your wallet and help you look for it. You know what I mean? If it's gonna benefit me. So really that's all I have for that part. Thank you.
Yeah.
Moving on to page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the ma worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Moving on to page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinite grief. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drank again. And with us, to drink is to die. Paul?
Yeah, man, I, you know, another form of self that pops up inside of me is a lot of self-pity. Like, I can't believe that people did X or these people did this to me. That's why I did X. I love a good self-pity because then it allows me to justify my crummy behavior to those people or otherwise. And if Paul is a victim, then I can do whatever I want, dude. Like if I'm hurt, I'll just do whatever I want to feel better. And I didn't know that until I started. See, I just thought life was happening at me all the time. And you know, you would drink too, or you would be upset too, or you would be justified in your anger if life was happening at you. And it wasn't until I went through this step that I realized that life is happening. I just happen to be there, right? Like people aren't doing things at me. They're just trying the best that they can, right? You know, I've hurt a lot of people in my life, and I was just trying to do the best I could for Paul. I'm just like everybody else is doing the best they can for themselves. You know, I know we don't have a monopoly on selfishness as alcoholics, but we use it in a real different way than most people, I think. And it was just really good to get that stuff out, dude. This idea of living life in deep resentment is fatal, is something I've really been struggling with, man. You know, not generally, but just trying to figure out how to say this. All right, so I've done a few four steps, and I've been really honest, and I'm continuously honest with people in my life in the program or outside. But I'm very honest with where I'm at in my life. And I've had this resentment against somebody in my life that has like severely wronged me multiple ways, multiple times. And, you know, I'm a good AA guy. I'm a nice guy. I'll forgive you, right? Like in my head, I'm like, oh, she's a sick person. And derp, derp, derp. And I'm trying, but I'm not getting relief, right? And And I've just really been struggling. I've had this one. It's not like one that just sits like, and I'm burnt up all the time, but it's just this one. It's like sitting in a crock pot on warm over here. It's just a little bubble, right? Just going, just staying nice and warm. And I think the most frustrating thing about that resentment is that I don't want it. I know what it is. I know what's going on. I don't want it. I'm armed with enough facts about myself that I don't want it. But I was talking to Matt the other day and I was like, man, I'm just so frustrated, dude. Because I have 99.9999% of my life is beautiful, friggin' perfect. Love it. Love my life. This is 0.00001% of this of my life. This one person is eating me up, and I have this mind that just magnifies that situation to where it becomes what I'm thinking about. So I start forgetting how beautiful my life is. And that for a guy like me who's, I've been sober long enough, I've felt the relief of the steps and helping other people and having that serenity in my life. It really upsets me to be bothered like that. I just couldn't figure it out. And I was praying for him, and that was making me angry. And I was like, I was, dude, I was running this thing through all the AA mill, and I just couldn't release it. And was sitting in a meeting at Alcoholics Anonymous on Tuesday, and I don't even know if we just read it or not. My brain's all over the place with this, but it was talking about how the people that wronged us are sick just like we are. And man, that just hit me like so deep in my chest. I started to cry like in the middle of a men's meeting. Like that's how moved I was. It was okay. No big deal. Anyways, I was just like, oh my gosh, dude, this person's just struggling through life like me. They're not doing that at me. They're just doing it. I happen to be the guy that's in the way. I've just been harboring so much anger and resentment towards this person who's just messed up, dude. And that's okay. And so I was able to like breathe that out and I just let it go. And as I cannot explain to you the freedom that comes from releasing a resentment like that, from doing the work and getting on the other side of it. And I'm about to hand this person like 80 grand, another 80 grand of my money. And I'm okay with it. And that is real weird for a guy like me. Like, if you knew who I was as a human being, that would be enough for me to like set fire to a house and like go nuts, dude. But I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna be free of this. How free do I wanna be? And I keep asking myself that. How free do I wanna be? And the answer is really free. I want to be free of this, and I want that person to go on and live their life. And so just that idea of just being burnt up with resentment. Another guy in that meeting said that he held a resentment to a guy against a guy in his hometown for a year and a half. He was real burnt up at this guy, and he kept popping up in his life. He kept wanting to fight him. And after a while, he brought it to his grand sponsor, and he's like, he told his grand sponsor how justified he was and all these things. And the grand sponsor goes, so what? It's like, this dude's been eating your lunch for a year and a half. He doesn't even know who you are. He just keeps popping up in your life randomly, and you're getting pissed off over and over again. He's like, you are allowing this person the to live rent-free in your head. So it was just this idea of so what? So what, dude? Even if I'm justified in my anger, so what? How free do you want to be? And I have to keep reminding myself of that. Because I want to be free. I want to enjoy my sober life. And I cannot do that when I'm magnifying somebody else's actions and letting it rule my life like that. That's just the most recent one. I got plenty of other ones I've worked through, but I just wanted to share that with you guys. All right, that's it.
Thanks. Yeah, I was thinking while the reading was going on and while Paul was talking, I did listen, by the way.
It's okay,
I
man.
wasn't just
I totally
thinking
get
what I
it.
was going to say, but
You've heard it all
I
before.
did listen.
No
Yeah,
big
but
deal.
so resentments, when I got here, I was so spiritually sick and just so hot on my mind, that I didn't even think that I had resentments. Like, I don't even think I knew what a resentment was. If I'm driving down the road and you're in front of me and you're going way slower than I need you to go and I'm late for something, you are purposely doing it to me. I took everything so personal. If someone looked at me a certain way, it was personal. And I, like Paul talked about, I would sit there and let that person eat me up. Meanwhile, they don't even know that they did something or that they were even a part of anything. And I'm 2 months into it and I'm still drinking about it, thinking about that person, you know? And it's like, what in the world? So when I released this stuff and wrote my fourth step out, you know, I got to realize that I was a prisoner in my own mind. Like I was completely handcuffed by my own resentments and the way that I felt about people in general. And I'm not talking about any specific person. I'm talking about everything and everyone, you know, whether it was work, the dog who peed in the house and whatever it was, I had a resentment for it. And I used those things nonstop to drink about. I used them as a crutch to lean up on, and that I was going to drink that day because of it. Little did I know, I really didn't have a choice whether I was going to drink or not. It had nothing to do with whether I had a resentment or not. So when I did my fourth step, you know, I got to a place where I was like, man, those are resentments. And I'll share a story because I was recently divorced when I first got sober, and my son was playing in a baseball tournament. It was over a long weekend, and my ex-wife and I were supposed to split it $20 a piece. It was like $40 for the whole thing. And I went on about this for 2 weeks to my sponsor and to the guys in the program. And I'm like, I know she's not going to pay it. F it. This is my time. I'm not letting him play in it. And it's going to be her fault. And I'm going to show that it's her fault. That way I get to say it to my kids. And, you know, I'm going to come in like a white knight at the last minute, and I'm going to pay it. And I'm going to tell him that the only reason he's there is because his dad cares about him and loves him. You know, like I'm going to be the hero, right? Like I'm like 8 months sober at this point. You know what I mean? I'm not claiming that I was like brand new, you know what I mean? I had been sitting in the rooms a little bit listening to y'all. And my sponsor finally one day, and he just said, "Why don't you stop complaining about it and just pay the extra $20? Don't mention it to anybody and shut your mouth." And I'm like, "Well, that's rude." You know what I mean? I'm like, "First of all, you're a jerk." You know what I mean? And I didn't use jerk. You know, I'm like, "You got some nerve, mister." You know what I mean? And I'm like, you know, I'm like pointing my finger, "You got some nerve." And I don't know why. I guess I took a minute and just thought about it, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna try it. Okay, I'm just gonna pay it. So I paid the $20 extra, and I never mentioned it, and I never said anything about it. My son had a great time at the tournament. They still lost, which was fine, but I wasn't resentful over that either.
A waste of
Yeah, I can't
$40.
believe I wasted $40 on you. No, that's awful, but true. No, so I just paid it, and you know, and I think that was my first taste of actual freedom that Paul talked about. Like, I never had to think about that situation or that person ever again. And for an alcoholic like me, I really like that because that gives me a little bit of power over things that I can't control, and I just let it go. And I just let it go. And I got to tell you, I've seen a lot of guys. I've had the ability to sponsor a lot of guys, not of all which stayed sober, by the way, successfully. But you know, I've watched a lot of people get to this step, and just they can't get over it. And what I'm going to tell you about that is the only reason that I think that I was successful with it was, other than the ultimatum of him telling me I had to do it, but the real part about it was I wanted to be spiritually better. I didn't want to feel like that anymore. I wanted to be free. And I watch guys, and the guys who stand a chance that stay sober in the group of people that we hang out with have the ability to be honest. They have the ability to meet with us, call each other, talk with each other, and be honest about what's going on in their lives. And it gives them that freedom. It gives them that ability to stay sober. I've seen a lot of guys fail doing the opposite, you know, just doing half truths and just kind of, you know, I'm going to keep that one thing in, and or whatever it is, and I'm taking that to my grave. And it's some of those may stay sober. I don't know. It's not been my experience that though. Like, you know, I've heard four steps that I'm just like, or fifth steps, and I'm like, That's it. Like, you only resent your dad. Like, you've been alive 45 years and you resent your dad. Like, that's the only resentment you have. Yep. And like, never see him again after that. You know what I mean? So what my point in that is I need all of you. I need you guys to call me on my BS when I'm in that mode. I need to bounce things off other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to use the tools that are given to me by this program in order for me to be able to successfully stay sober one day at a time. I can't do it on my own. Without you guys, it's just impossible. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing, man.
Again, on page 66, we turned back to the list where it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We cannot wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, are sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Paul?
Man, I really feel like I buried the lead in that last share because this is what I was referring to. But, what this sounds like to me is giving people grace. And I don't do that, not at all. Like, my natural state is to be a judgment machine that either judges that I'm way better than you or way worse than you. And there's really no in between. I'm just superior or inferior, and that's it. And I just was that way until I was like 28 when I did this step. And it is a really crazy thing to look at the things that other people have done and to me, or done and that affected me, and to look at those and actually admit that they're sick and accept that was really difficult for me because I'm a victim, dude. Like, you don't understand how hard my life was, Matt. It was $40.
I was there.
It's like, it's just, it, these things are so big to me because they affected me so deeply because I'm just a big feeler, you know what I mean? And like, it really hurt me. And what this step really gave me, besides the ability to be honest with myself and see who I am, which we're going to get to in a second, it really allowed me to give people grace. Like, same guy that's like behind you in traffic, the thought never occurs to me, maybe they're in a rush to get to the hospital. There's four lanes to the right. Perhaps I'll just get over one and let them by. I'm brake checking people. I'm hitting them with
So
windshield
you're the
wiper
guy.
fluid. I'm not the
You're the
guy.
guy.
I'm not a tailgater. I'm not a tailgater, but I don't
I'm
like.
behind you. You're
So the thing is like that doesn't even occur to me that they may be dealing with something. The thing is that people's lives don't even occur to me. I just don't. And when I did this step, I started getting a feeling of, oh wow, they weren't doing this at me. That idea of, how did you put it, man? I forget exactly what you said, but that, oh, taking everything so personally. These aren't personal attacks. That person didn't come up behind me to use the pit maneuver to get me out of the way because they wanted to take my money or something. Like, they're just driving fast. Get the hell over. It's stuff like that that it doesn't even occur to me, but I really did have this fundamental shift in my thinking and kind of in my, like, I was gonna be like in my chest, but that's where my heart is. So in my heart, I had a change. I was a different person as a result of this step. And it granted me the ability to not take things so damn personally, to realize that people are sick and to try and give them some grace. And as a result, I'm not holding on to stuff. It's almost like I was made out of Teflon instead of like stainless steel. I can still not cook in stainless steel. People can do it. I can't. So I burn everything to a stainless steel. It's like I become Teflon and I can just like things just kind of roll off. That is not who I was, dude. I just clung on to everything, man. I was like this weird hoarder of like wrong deeds. And that's freedom. And I guess the longer I've been in this program, like you were saying, the people that are able to really be honest and do this step, you see them lighten, right? Like you see them lighten up, dude, because they're not weighed down with that burden of like resentment and anger and fear and it's just like it's not weighing them down anymore. I felt the exact same way. I can't wait to talk about the fourth column because that's when I got the real freedom. But this step, it gave me my first taste of the freedom that I was looking for. And that's to be present, right? Because when I'm worried about the past, I'm resentful at the future or what's about to happen because I'm not getting what I think I need or want and feel. And when I'm looking back in the past, I can't be present. And that's where all the beautiful stuff is happening. It's like right in front of me where my feet are, but I'm like 10 years back here or 10 years up there. I'm freaking out about everything that's happened or is going to happen, and I'm not here. And that's where the joy is in my life. And I didn't know that. I just had no idea. I was just surviving, dude, for like 30 years. I was just holding on for dear life. And it's so much easier than that. And I'm glad that I did this step to find that out.
Yeah, I this was an experience for me. It took a lot of practice, to be honest with you. I mean, I wish I could tell you that I was just like instantly granted Snow White, you know what I mean? Listen, white as snow, and that I was able to start seeing people in different lights and all that. And man, it really took a lot of practice for me to think of a person that I'm having an issue with as someone who's sick, as if they were, had a disease or some sort of, you know what I mean? Like to it, and I had to really think deeply into that to be able to understand like just other people in general. Like, again, they're not doing anything to me. They made a decision. Did it affect me? Maybe, maybe not. But I always just took it so personal. It was always an attack on me. You're doing this on purpose to make me look horrible, or you want something that I have, or blah blah blah, because that's kind of the world that I lived in before I got sober, which was, it was a dog eat dog world. I'm gonna scratch and fight and bite my way to the top. Don't care who I have to screw over and whatever I needed to do to get there, I'm gonna do it. And whatever makes my ego jump out and makes me feel good is what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna conquer whatever it is in front of me. And it's kind of embarrassing to me right now to sit here and think about that, the way that I was as compared to the way that I behave today, which is I do, man. Whenever I have a problem with somebody or an institution, whatever it might be, you can put whatever in that place, fill in the blank, whenever I think about that and I think about like, oh well, the bank's not mad at me because I'm not giving, you know what I mean? They're mad because I didn't make a payment like I agreed to. They're not personally inflicting all these wounds on me, all these bank fees and stuff. Like they're not like they didn't write that part of the stuff for me. Like they wrote it for everyone. And if you do this is a consequence, But to me, it was like, man, but it's me. You could fix this for me. Why can't you, And I just didn't have the ability. So it is kind of looking back on it. I don't know if embarrassing is the right word, but looking back on how one-sided I was towards people in general, and then going through the four step several times. I've been through it a couple different times, and probably am due again for another. But looking at where I'm at now and in the way that we live, and I say we because this is something that we all practice. Or should be, or hopefully are. I don't know how to say that, but I'm not telling you what to do. But hopefully it's something that I should be practicing. You know what I mean? That when situations arise, I pause, I think about what's going on. If it's bothering me, I share it with another human being. Whether a lot of times it's Paul, because he knows everything about me, or David or Mark or whoever it is. I called somebody. I have this conversation with them and they point out where my mind is so skewed on the view of that situation. Like maybe they're scared to death because in Paul's situation, maybe they're scared to death because they don't have the financial ability to take care of themselves, and this is their last shot at taking care of that. And I can afford to do that, but they can't. Maybe I can look at it from a different view, when somebody else points it out to me. Because I don't always have the ability to, like I said, I can pray, like Paul talked about, I can pray on something for a long time. If it continues to pop up, I know that I need to talk about it with somebody else. I talk about it, they share their view on it, and I just take a deep breath and I have that freedom from it. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, you're right. Maybe they are sick like that. And I just have the ability now to practice this enough to put it in a different light. I don't have to take it so personally, and I do not have to go after those people as if they've done something vindictive to me. People are just people. They all make mistakes. We all make mistakes. I still make mistakes. Just ask my wife, my new wife, not my old wife. Don't ask my old wife.
She kept the receipt.
Yeah, don't ask my old wife. Don't ask my ex-wife. Ask my new wife. Yeah. We've been married 5 years, so it's fair. Fair. She's been around long enough. But yeah, I mean, it's that part of the reading, like looking at them as a sick individual, it took practice, like a lot of stuff in the program does. But again, without you all, without being there to do the things, the simple actions that I learned about and very early in sobriety, making phone calls, going to my home group, participating, and just talking with the newcomer, those types of things. Like I need to do those things, and when I do them, I get the freedom to be able to treat people with love and kindness, which is, now that I say that out loud, it's pretty amazing considering where I used to be. Thanks.
Thank
On page 67, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was not ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Paul?
Yes, dude, the fourth column is where the truth lies. Look, the first three columns are real easy. Who screwed me over? What did they do? And how did it hurt me? I've been thinking about that shit for like 30 years. I had a guy on there from elementary school. I remember this like it happened yesterday on the playground in front of Windsor Woods Elementary School, Virginia Beach. Kid Brett makes fun of me for wearing the same pairs of pants 2 days in a row. My sister worked at Bugle Boy. I happened to have two pairs of pants that were the same pants. I liked wearing them,
That's
so I
so
wore them.
much.
I wash my clothes every time I wear them. Shut up, Brett. So he's making fun of me. F you, Brett. I remember that dude. That pissed me off. It was on my doorstep like 25 years later. I thought about that, not all the time, but when I thought about Windsor Woods Elementary School, fuck you, Brett. It's just, I have my mind is like a friggin' steel trap for the wrongs of others, dude. So I was ready. I was like, let's go. First three columns, boom, not nailed them. That fourth column was a little tricky though, because that asked me where I was at fault. And I had just spent the last 25 years convincing myself that it was other people and leaning on that and drinking at them and having bad behavior because of them and, justifying my life because of their poor behavior. And when I started that step, I was like, oh, come on, Paul, you're an honest guy. You can be honest with yourself. And I was like, oh my God, I've never been honest with myself. And I've never been honest. And so I get into this fourth column and I start seeing the patterns. Like I said, I do them top to bottom. So I did all three columns and I started at the top. Who's at the top? I don't know, my wife. Duh. So I start like writing all the things that I had done as a husband that were just not good, right? Like not a good partner, judgmental, get frustrated easily with sickness, whatever. And then, the easy people were easy for me, my family. And then I was like, wait, my dad, I'll come back to that one. I never did anything to that guy. So I go down this list and I start seeing things that are patterns. And it was really helpful to me. I'm like, man, super judgmental. Really just this judgment machine that just talks a lot of shit. I mean, that's really one of the biggest ones for me. And I got done with all of that, and I was like, okay, I see the point in this. This is cool. I have no idea what to do with this dad situation though, because my dad was a very active alcoholic my whole life, and I never did anything to the guy. But he broke a lot of promises. He's a pretty crummy dad, did a bunch of dumb shit. So I was like, well, maybe there's nothing here. And I sat and I thought about it. I was like, there has to be something because it says that there's something. There's something for everybody. And then I was just sure that there was nothing there. And then all of a sudden, dude, apparently I'm a crier because I cried at this one too. I broke down. I was like, oh my gosh, that's it. And I wrote down, used his alcoholism to justify my own poor behavior, talked ill of him any chance I got, talked about how I'd be a better father, talked about how he was a bum. It wasn't, and it was a big eye-opening moment for me because I didn't have a part in that situation, that I didn't have a part in what happened. I was just a small child. But my part was fanning the flames of that resentment, just keeping those coals nice and warm, just talking shit and just being ugly behind his back, just keeping him warm. And so my idea was that Paul Jeffries was the problem in all of these situations. That's not true. I can't be all to blame in any situation. I shared blame in some of those situations about what happened. But in that one instance, I realized it might not be that you had a part in it, but you have a part in keeping the resentment alive and well. And that was a big moment for me. And it's helped a lot of guys that I've worked with because they're like, I don't see it. I'm like, I know. Let's talk about that. And that was really, really helpful, dude. That fourth column is, it did this weird thing where I couldn't be a victim anymore. And that was kind of scary, but it was also kind of liberating at the same time because, but also really frustrating. Okay. So it was scary, liberating, and frustrating. It was scary because I didn't have anywhere to hide anymore. It was frustrating because it meant that I had to change if I didn't want to be that guy anymore. That's frustrating. And it was also frustrating because, or it was liberating because of that, but it was frustrating because I have overdone it with that fourth column. And I have blamed myself and owned too much in the past. And that has been a frustrating thing where if I'm disturbed, I'm like, oh, I must be doing something wrong. I can really use AA as a what do they call that? A flail? Like self-flagellation. Yeah. Like I'm like, oh, I should run this through the fourth step. And I'm just like beating myself up. I'm like, I should get the freedom from the fourth step. It's gotta be my fault. And I just beat myself up. And so if you're going through something like that, just know that it's okay, man. Like it's okay. You're not all to blame. You might have a part. You might be keeping this resentment going, but just please be easy on yourself. We're sick people getting better. We're not bad people getting good. And if I keep that mindset, then it allows me to grow. They talk about a growth mindset. Like that's what I'm trying to do here. I don't know what you're trying to do, but I'm trying to be in a growth mindset and slowly by little get better and better. And if I'm being honest, like you're talking about, I got a chance. If I hide stuff and I keep it to myself and I don't talk to anybody and I run away, well, I'm going to get the same results that I always did. So that's what I got for that. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I love that. Paul stole my line, by the way, so I don't have much to say,
I love
but
it.
I was going to say, I absolutely have to be honest with this. Like, if you're going to do this part of the program and you go into the fourth step and you go into the fourth column and you're looking at that column, I mean, it scared me for a long time, scared me away. I was going to have to admit the things that I was responsible for in my behaviors. And I thought it was going to be all this stuff. And lo and behold, my fourth column became like selfish, self-seeking, self-centered. It was like the same thing over and over and over for every single situation. Some of them varied a little bit in what I was doing, but like for the most part, it was all pretty much the same behaviors over and over and over. So I don't know why it scared me so much. I guess because when I did it, after I wrote that a couple of times on some of the most important people in my life, I realized that I was not a good dude who just drank too much. Like I had abused people. I had taken things that weren't mine. I had, you know what I mean? Like I found out all this stuff about myself, and like Paul talked about liberating, I was like, damn, I don't want to be that guy anymore. Like that is not what I thought I was at all. You know, now that I'm armed with the truth, now what? Now what do I do? And I stole Paul's line there because that's what he says all the time.
Now what?
Now what? You know, now what are you gonna do with that? And you know, it was a lot of practice and some precise measurements that had to go into it, but I had to actually, you know, look at the behaviors that I had and then act the opposite for a while and continue to do the opposite of what I thought was the right decision. And when I thought I had the right decision, I had to bounce it off y'all. You know, I had to bounce it off other people. I had to talk to my sponsor about it. I had to talk to Paul about it to get to a place where now, you know, when I act selfishly or self, you know, in a way that's going to benefit me by using you or whatever, like I know that immediately now. Like it kicks in immediately. There is no question in my mind. Like when I do that, I will tell on myself in a heartbeat. It's so fast now. And that's kind of what that fourth column gave for me. I will share one story with you that's a little bit funny as I close. Because Paul brought up somebody from his childhood, which Paul doesn't even know this. So I'm sharing something with y'all that Paul doesn't know. But
Let's go.
in when I was in the 7th grade, there was this guy named Danny Krause.
Hate him.
Yeah. And so this guy, I was new to the school and I would show up there. I was arrogant. I'd show off. I had new shoes, you know, I'd
Right.
act all, you know, whatever. I'm trying to date new girls and doing all this stuff. This guy hated my guts. Every day after school, he met me and punched me in the face at least 3 times. Every day. At least 3 times. It could have been more. I couldn't count. He had really fast hands. He was quick. And
Damn,
so
dude.
that I carried that guy, you
Yeah.
know, till I was like 39 years old. And I had done nothing to him in my mind. Nothing. But I'm thinking about him, you know, from the 7th grade until I'm 39, 40 years old, right? And I share it with my sponsor, and he was like, "Did you ever get a lick back in or something smart like that?" And the answer was no. No, I didn't. He was too fast. I ran most of the time because I was a coward. I was a coward. He had fast hands. But it was just funny the things that we carry, you know, the how hemmed up by stuff I was that really didn't matter. Like, you know, I probably could have treated that guy so much better. He may or may not have still punched me in the mouth. I don't know. Maybe. But I never gave him the opportunity because I never had the grace to treat him with any kind of dignity or respect. You know, I talked trash behind his back. I, you know, told people what a piece of crap he was and all that stuff. Long story short, I married my new wife and her ex-husband looks just like him. So there you go. So thanks. No.
Let's go get
Yeah, you know, it's funny how the world comes around and it's funny how things happen, but I do have to thank you all. I mean, this program saved my life. The people in this room right here, Paul and I have known each other since day one when I came into the program, I think. Well, within the first week, we've been best friends ever since. We talk almost every single day. You know, I have a bunch of people in my life that are there for me so that I can talk through things with them so I don't have to be like that anymore. I get to be free and happy, man. I don't have to mistreat people. Little did I know that people actually react way better to you when you treat them well and with kindness and love. Who
knew?
knew? Yeah, who knew? So, man, I love this fourth step.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks.
Thank you both.
Yeah, Paulie. Hard to never.
You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. The PayPal and Venmo are in the baskets. The Seven Traditions states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to a fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which all our meetings can take place. Are there any A related enemies? Would you like to, or do you want me to?
Oh, I have. Oh, you
Sure.
can.
Okay. I do have one. So there's a way after Christmas eating meeting. Please join us for our annual way after Christmas food and fellowship meeting on January 28th, 2026 at the Deep Creek Serenity meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Food will be served at 6:30 p.m. Our open discussion meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. You may bring a dish if you wish. The meeting is held at the Deep Creek United Methodist Church on George Washington Highway in Chesapeake. All are invited. Any other A-related announcements? All right. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands.
Big old group.
Dang.
Dang.
Literature is available on that table. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship in A is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me or to email info@simpleactions.net. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. All are invited to encourage to join us for the fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella. Are we still doing that tonight? All right. Thanks to all who participated. Let's thank Matt and Paul again. And after the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to say thank you to both of them. And Travis has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Hi, everyone. My name is Travis, an alcoholic.
Yes.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Hear freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.
And we have a great way of closing.
Oh.
Yay. Yeah, we do. I forgot they had the video on, dude. I like to use my shirt. Okay. My man. Uh-oh. Now what?
It's gonna be all right.
All right.
It's gonna be okay.
Shit. All right, let's take a moment of silence for those still sick and suffering, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
for our Father, having
okay.
thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Keep coming back.